to ask you what your memories of kindy and pre-primary are. Did you spend lots of time playing in the sandpit, the home corner, painting or building Lego skyscrapers? It was all pretty free and easy and a lot of fun. Do you recall spending much time at a desk or lined up on the mat, learning sight words, counting to 30? Well, there is a growing concern in WA that play-based learning in early childhood education is in rapid decline and that it is harming a child's development. Some teachers, education consultants and lecturers believe there is too much emphasis on sedentary and rote learning because schools are becoming too results driven. So what needs to change? That is our Focus panel discussion today.
Focus Perth with Nadia Mitsopoulos on ABC Radio Perth.
And joining us from our Bunbury studio this morning is Sue Briggs, who has had a 40-year career in education, working as a pre-primary teacher. She's also been an early childhood consultant for the Education Department. Sue, welcome.
Thank you very much, Nadia. Glad to be here.
And with me in our Perth studio is Dr. Sandra Hesterman, the Director of Early Childhood Education at Murdoch University. She's also a committee member of Early Childhood Australia here in WA. Welcome.
Oh, thank you, Nadia.
And we also have Dale Cross. She's a WA Today journalist, also a mother of two young children. And Dale's been writing a lot about this issue recently. Dale, good to have you here too.
Thank you.
And it is a pupil-free day today for most schools. So parents and teachers, I would love to hear from you. What goes on in your kindy or pre-primary class? How much free playtime do your children actually get, and do you think it's enough? You can also ask a question of our panel. The numbers you need this morning, 1300 222 720. You can also send a text on 0437 922 720. And Dale, if I can start with you. Now, you have been writing about this issue quite a bit, and you've been talking to parents and kindy teachers. What was the story that first resonated with you that you wanted to write more about this issue?
I saw a Facebook post, and it was written by a Perth-based kindy teacher, and it was just such a beautifully written, emotive post talking about how she had a kindy child wrapped around her like a baby koala, sobbing his eyes out, you know, because he was so young. School was a new experience for him. And she was questioning whether anyone who's pushing for less play-based learning and more formal structure and what she called academic rigour, had they ever actually been in a kindy class? Did they know how young and vulnerable these little kids were? And just the way she wrote it just really hit home to a lot of people, I think, because it was shared a lot.
And you quickly realised that it wasn't an isolated view.
That's right. So when I started looking into this, teachers that I spoke to were using terms like this is a crisis, there's a death of play-based learning in our classrooms, it's a critical situation that needs addressing now, and then parents as well, they were... I was coming across lots of parents who were worried that their kid wasn't enjoying school because it was just too serious for them, I think.
And that was what the children were saying to their parents, that that was coming from the children.
Yes. There was one mum that I spoke to. She had a four-year-old son in pre-primary, and she said that he was coming home not enjoying school, saying, you know, I don't know the answers, mum. You know, I don't know what to say when they ask me, this sort of thing. So she thought, well, I'll go into the school and see what's going on. Went in to speak to the teacher and was basically told that play-based learning doesn't work and this was pre-primary, it's not kindy anymore, we're going to be serious and that's just the way we do it.
Sandra Hesterman, I need to bring you in because you're sitting there and you are nodding a lot as you listen to this.
It is the case that there's more expected of pre-primary children. I mean, the international definition of early childhood education is birth to eight, and for a long time we felt that children aged six, seven and eight were lost to that definition in Western Australia, and now it is the case that pre-primary has become like year one would have been, you know, 10, 20 years ago. So we're seeing, you know, say, for example, expectation in learning phonics, the phonics that children in year two would have learnt say, 25 years ago are now being introduced into kindergarten and pre-primary. So we have to ask yourself, is it that the child aged 3, 4 entering into kindergarten, or the child aged 5, 6 entering into pre-primary, are they more intelligent? Are they more able, that they are able to cope with the pressure and the increased formalisation that's occurring in those classrooms?
And what you'd prefer to see is more free play?
Free play is the cornerstone of early childhood education. So when people come to university and they train to be an early childhood teacher, that's one of the fundamental practices that they learn, is how to approach children's learning and development and their well-being in a holistic manner, where we're just not looking at cognitive outcomes, but we're also looking at their social and emotional, their physical, their creativity. We're looking at the whole child. And so when we start to skewer the curriculum so that we're looking at a very narrow focus, usually for the purposes of standardised testing in literacy and numeracy, then we favour a particular developmental pathway. And when we do that, it's at the detriment of children who are entering into kindergarten with huge diversity.
And we'll talk more about where that drive is coming from in a moment. You talked there about skewering the curriculum. Has that meant that the word play has become problematic?
Yes, it has. And that's the feedback that comes from teachers, in particular early childhood teachers, and definitely from the leading Western Australian early childhood advocacy groups, who have no political interest. They don't have an alignment. Their pure focus is representing the interest of young children and their families. And as Dale has mentioned, increasingly parents are confused, stressed. The narrative, which used to be schools being ready for young children because there was an appreciation of the diversity that was walking through the classroom door, we've seen that flip, particularly in the last 5 years, where it's about parents, get your children ready for school.
Sue Briggs, if I can bring you into the conversation now. Now, you've recently resigned as an early childhood consultant for the Education Department. I'm wondering what drove that decision.
Well, yeah, just to confirm, excuse me, it's now 4 years since I resigned from the department because, and that was from a consultancy position, but not in directly in early childhood at that time. Mm-hmm. I was in the building section, but wanting to go back to teaching, which I have done right through my career, and was very concerned about the push in a lot of schools from the administration, not from the department, but from the administration, to do completely inappropriate things. And in the position I was in, I was travelling around schools all the time and seeing what was happening, and was very concerned, and therefore I decided to resign from the department rather than go and teach in a department school and go to an independent school where the support for the early years was far stronger and the support from ASWAF, yeah, extremely strong.
What were the changes you were seeing?
The formality being pushed down, very much as Sandra said there, the idea coming across now that kindy kids have to be ready to go to school rather than schools being ready to accept every child where they are at and help them from there. The type of testing that is expected of teachers as the children arrive to see what they are doing, and the push down of the curriculum from, again, as Sandra said, from year one and two into pre-primary and now into kindy. This whole thing of readiness for kindy is very scary. I want to confirm everything that Sandra said and Dale, and it is the concern of parents and teachers that have really got me over the last 4 years, and looking in on Facebook pages of early childhood teachers, things they are being pressured to do. And I think it is very important to stress that early childhood teacher training is very different than primary teacher training. It is a specialist area. Early childhood teachers are taught to work with children from 0 to 8. It's what they specialise in. And their professionalism is being questioned in schools, and I go as far to say it's being bullied, and I have got proof of that from teachers who are too frightened to put their names forward and write in and speak anonymously. But some horrific things are going in schools, and there is a lot of fear and worry in the early childhood community about where we are going and what we're doing to children.
And this is being pushed by principals, is that what you're
saying? Yes, the admin teams at schools. The department are supporting the importance of play and explicit teaching when needed. They're pushing the Queensland documents, the National Quality Standards and the Early Years Late Learning Framework, which is meant to guide us, the NQS, to guide us from 0 to 7, and the Early Years Framework in WA just up to kindy. But in reality, principals are saying no, we're ignoring that and pushing what's listed down as year one or sometimes pre-primary curriculum from the from our WA assessment centre into kindy.
That's right.
Sitting down, learning sight words, being expected to spell words before they've been through the whole thing of early literacy and knowing what a word is, what a sentence is, how you hold a book, you know, what a letter is, that a letter is different depending, like a dog is a dog no matter where it's standing or which way it's looking, but a letter is only a letter when it's in a certain position. Very fine discriminations that children need time to master, play with, work with, become familiar with a knowledgeable adult.
Okay, thanks, Sue. Look, one thing I do that does come to mind in those, you know, days gone past and year one was that there was this period of readiness that was inbuilt into the year one program. So accepting the diversity that existed among the young children, there was a lot of time spent at play base, but a lot of time spent on visual discrimination, auditory discrimination, all those very fundamental, foundational skills.
Absolutely.
That whole notion of transition seems to have waived. You know, we're not having a transition. Even in the kindergarten, I've had feedback that the start of this year, it wasn't transitional even in terms of a staggered entry. It was children coming at 9 o'clock on the first day with mum, dad, grandma, prams, siblings, all very excited. And just the logistics of getting those children in all starting exactly the same time. You only need one child to start crying. And then the
whole classroom goes.
That's right. So this notion of transition, you know, that's been lost in the process as well.
Okay, I want to pick up on a couple of points there. And Dale, I want to bring you in because we were talking about where this pressure is coming from. Dale, principal-driven?
Principal-driven. I mean, I had one kindy teacher say to me that it seems like the current policy is that principals are free to make any decisions that they want in their own school with no accountability except to NAPLAN scores. And then that gives the pressure on the principal to look at academics over play. And, you know, when you've got children doing play-based learning or playing, there's no numbers, you know, generated straight out of that to say, yay, that was a very successful program or something like that. That's my understanding. So the teachers are actually saying, my principal is telling me that I have to do this. I know it's not the way that I should be teaching, but what do we do about it?
Well, how can they resist that?
Well, they can't really.
Yeah, and excuse me if I can butt in.
No,
there,
butt in at any time.
Particularly now, with a lot of teachers not being permanent on short-term contract, you can't turn around and say, look, I'm sorry, this isn't the way to do it. You know, this isn't what I've been trained to do. Well, I mean, you can, but I know the answers that some people have got, and it's do it or you're out of here.
A couple of texts coming through. This one from Sebastian. Isn't it amazing how the old education system worked for over 100 years, but it's now all gone haywire and children are starting school later and not learning very well at all. Go back to how it was. It was obviously a much better system. We didn't wrap our children in cotton wool. This one, Now, there's no name, and I understand why it is a teacher. As a teacher in a public primary and in public pre-primary, I feel we are at a crisis point. Play has been devalued and crushed. We are no longer allowed time to play in our playground unless there are explicit curriculum links. The teaching of social and behavioural skills are not enough. There needs to be a link to English, maths, science, or HASS, which is humanities and social sciences. Mm-hmm. There is no room for child-led play that supports creativity and critical thinking and problem solving. My issue is that the department continues to fail to instruct schools to allow pre-primary time for play. They say they do, but principals have too much discretion, and that is the problem. Thank you for that text. And this one, this is why I send my children to private schools. There is just too much pressure on academic learning at state schools. My daughter would have been lost in the system. We tried state kindy. The teacher only cared about the advanced children. And Craig says, if we never stopped playing, we never stopped learning. Mm-hmm. 0437 922 720 is the number. So,
Can I just come back on the transition point,
please,
as well?
Yes.
Sorry, about talking what used to happen, you know, in year one with that readiness period, whatever. The strength when pre-primary was added to the department, we had virtually then, oh, I don't want to call it readiness, but actually a year of readiness for schooling. But it added the whole physical, social, emotional aspect of learning as well, rather than concentrating on the gross and fine motor and the visual aspect that was happening in year one. And that is what is being lost again now. Mm. And with the gradual start being stopped to the kindergarten, you know, can you imagine being a 3+ child who's been used to being in the family group, perhaps, you know, brothers and sisters, lots of cousins? Not always the case. And particularly in country schools, they can be quite isolated. Suddenly they're in a class with 20 other children and goodness knows how many other adults. It is a real shock to their system. Moving to being a child, you know, with one or two adults at home and perhaps a few siblings to being one in 20 is a huge shift and takes a lot of getting used to.
And I want to go to Jenny, who is a lecturer, who wants to talk about this. Good morning, Jenny.
Oh, good morning. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you.
I just want to, I work in education with Sandra, you know, at a different university in pre-service teacher education, and we've been watching this trend happen over a number of years, and we're deeply concerned about it as well at Curtin University. We are concerned that we're hearing that children are only being allowed outside during recess and lunchtime.
And that is the designated free play
time.
And that's
yeah.
it.
Yes. Yeah, and I think also we have to be mindful too that when we talk about free play, it's not free for all play. It's quite deliberately planned and set up by the teacher, so we're not seeing that happen outdoors. We also know that when children are physically active and playing, that their stress levels reduce. There's quite a bit of research around that. So I think that what we're seeing here is children being forced to do things that they would be better off doing a little bit older, and being able to develop, as both Sue and Sandra have said, those earlier skills. Mm-hmm. And in addition to that, we're seeing more pressure put on the children and their stress levels are rising. So there's also quite a bit of concern in the mental health area around younger and younger children with mental health issues. And I think some of that is to do with the stress that's going on in their lives. The other thing I did want to say was that I really think that parents play a very important part in advocating for their children. And I think that hearing, you know, your text coming in saying we chose a school because it was play-based, it makes me happy, because it means that parents aren't going down that track of my child has to be able to read earlier, therefore they must be smarter type pressure being put on parents as well. Mm. So I think that we need to go back to the basic principles of early childhood philosophy, which is a play-based child choice learning for some of the time and some quite, you know, very carefully designed programs by teachers that, you know, they can still learn their phonics, but it can do it in a play-based way, not necessarily in a very formal way.
Jenny, you raised some great points there. We will get our panel to respond, and thank you for that, because it does beg the question then, Jenny talks, as you all have, about the need for more play. How many hours then a day? I mean, what should the structure of a day look like?
I can only comment on what we used to have as an example, but there was no distinction between play-based learning inside the classroom or outside the classroom. Mm-hmm. You know, it was the key focus was on the child, where the child was at in their development, play-based, and definitely tapping into their interests, because there was intrinsic motivation then to, you know, to explore their interests. And then it was the craft of the teacher, the early childhood teacher, who would look at the play-based learning, look at the child's interest, and make the links to the curriculum. It wasn't the curriculum driving the child. It was the child's interest that was driving the curriculum. So
now the curriculum drives it, because there is a national curriculum on this, and there is a state policy on this that does allow for play-based learning. That came out, I think, in 2011.
Mm.
And we will speak to the Education Department about that in a moment.
Yep.
One thing I want to make comment about is accessibility, because while we had feedback from a parent being able to withdraw their child from one school because they weren't happy, and they're obviously empowered enough to do so, that's not the case of many other parents. Other parents are just living in a community and they're going to send their child to the local community school, and they, unless they have children already attending that school, they will not know the quality of the play-based learning, or if in fact it's even being offered.
Exactly.
And they may not have the choice to actually move their child to another school.
I mean, that's the experience of parents that I've been talking to. They say that the problem is essentially hidden. How do you know as a parent which school to send your child to? And then once they're in there, I spoke to one parent, she's in a school that is way too structured for her liking, but all the other schools say, sorry, no, we can't take you, and that's it. Stay there where your child's very unhappy and you're not happy with what's going on.
Mm-hmm. That's right. If they're out of boundary, there's no obligation from the school, government school, to take them in.
Anna on the text says, I just heard the comment about sending kids private rather than public. We've done the opposite. Started private for kindy and moved to public for pre-primary at a great school. No shoes in school hours for kindy and pre-primary. There are mud kitchens and crazy play. That's Upper Swan Primary.
Nadia Mitsopoulos on ABC Radio Perth and on the ABC Listen app.
Talking about your young children this morning, we're talking about the age group is the 4, 5, 6-year-olds, so kids in kindy and pre-primary, and the decline, the concern about the decline in play-based learning. Lots of calls coming through. We are going to get to them. We are also going to have a chat to Gary Hewitt. He's the Assistant Executive Director of Early Childhood at the Department of Education, to just get a better understanding of what the expectations is in those classrooms. We'll get to him in a moment. I just want to go to Danielle, who's been very patiently waiting. Good morning, Danielle.
My little boy, who just turned 5, so he's one of the younger ones in his classroom, was so excited to start pre-primary after finishing kindy, and now we have very big struggles to get him to go to school at all, and his response is always the same, that it is too hard and too much. I feel a bit lost as a parent because he's in a private school. We have a lot of schools in our area. We have probably too much choice. I have sat and interviewed with almost every single principal, and it all comes back to the same thing, and it's all about the curriculum and that they need to try. I want to know why a 5-year-old is behind. So I'm being told my son is struggling in literacy and needs more homework and home learning. Sorry, it's called home learning now. And my other response is he is just turned 5. He's not developmentally ready to be there. Mm-hmm. I feel he needs to still be in kindy. But I get told, well, pre-primary is compulsory and I don't have that option unless he was a June baby.
Right, Danielle, we're going to get our panel to give you some advice, but what does he say to you? You mentioned there that your son says it's too hard. What distresses him the most?
When I sit in the classroom and watch him, because I've been parenting for, I've been there probably one day a week since he started and started struggling, it's the consistent expectations of him having to sit on the mat, doing worksheets, writing sentences, his first name and his surname. He's kind of coming straight in and he's looking at his work and he's going, no, it's too hard. he doesn't fit into this box. He's a typical little boy, and he's not designed to sit on a mat for half an hour. When I explain and express my concerns, I do get told that if we allow him to do these things, like get up for a minute to leave the mat and come back, then all the other kids will want to do it too. So I'm finding there's a very big one-size-fits-all. And I'm also getting this response from a lot of principals within the area. Unfortunately, it looks like my only options are very, very expensive schools or alternative education like Steiner and Montessori that will actually can understand the individual needs of a child, that some aren't designed to fit for half an hour.
All right, Danielle, let's get Sue and Sandra and Dale to respond. And thank you very much for sharing that.
Yeah. It breaks my heart to hear that and unfortunately hear it so often from teachers. Just looking at some of the early childhood teacher Facebook groups now, I sit crying about things that teachers are posting, and parents at times, teachers particularly, aren't always able to put their name to what they're saying because they know it will be held against them. The whole lack of a child being able to be taught at where they're at rather than, you know, made to sit down. We know boys developmentally in fine motor skills don't find it as easy as girls. And that sounds like a sexist statement, but it's just the way children, you know, the different roles children seem to play. It all evens out by the time they're eight, but children of that age need to be up and moving around. We used to say in pre-primary that it should be half the time inside, half the time outside. As Sandra said, there's no such thing as indoor or outdoor learning. A teacher can teach and create and help the children create the play, whether they're indoors or outdoors. But what is so important about the outdoors is all that gross motor development which children have to go through before they can sit down and get fine motor control of their fingers for grasp of pencils and so forth.
And you learn a lot more from that outdoor play. And you talk about, and please jump in, the soft skills, you know, communication, empathy, getting on with other people, because you're going away from that parallel play to engage in a group. I mean, what do we learn? What do children learn from playing outside for 4 hours a day at school?
Probably the same as what they learn inside or can do. Can do. There's potential to learn exactly what you're learning inside the classroom is outside the classroom. It's not that one environment is exclusive to the other. Look, I agree with Sue. It's an absolute tragedy, and this is not something new. This is something that, as I said before, the early childhood advocacy groups have been concerned as a high priority since 2013. So this is not something that's just been, you know, delivered now. And the key stakeholders are well informed. They know that we have a problem here, and we are really looking for leadership in this space. And the leadership must go beyond the local primary school principal.
Danielle, good luck with that, and thank you so much for sharing your story. Let's go to Narelle. Good morning, Narelle.
Hello.
Hi, you moved your daughters.
I did.
Tell us about that.
We were at the local government school for pre-primary. Prior to that, they'd been in an amazing, very early childhood environment where it was lots of play-based learning, and they went up to the local primary school, and pretty much what your previous caller has just said, completely different environment. I had ended up with two girls who didn't want to go to school. I had one who was plotting how she could walk out of school and go and play at a friend's place for the afternoon. And they were developing phobias about reading and writing in particular. And for me, being an obsessive reader, it was quite heartbreaking to have two girls who were being put off reading. So I looked elsewhere, and we've ended up at a wonderful school that's an independent one, very much about play-based learning. You were talking before about what are they going to get from being outside. They had a whole morning that's outside. It's in the bush.
There's a lot of team building. There's a lot of those soft skills about negotiation. They're still building, so they're doing some physics and some engineering in that process as well. And then they can translate that into actually going back into the classroom and doing the kind of things that you're probably more likely to expect. You know, they do some writing, they do some reading about the things that they've done. So it's very easy to actually get that kind of interaction if your school is structured around doing that.
Yeah, Narelle.
That's the big thing, like if your school is structured around doing that. It's from a parent's perspective, it's so disappointing. Like it's like a postcode lottery. You send your child to the local school and you might get lucky like I have. The school my daughter goes to is very play-based. You know, you were saying, Sandra, that they don't ease the children in. Well, they do at my school. You know, they have one-on-ones with the teacher for half an hour on their first day, and then only a few of them are there that morning. It's just a morning, and then a couple of days later it's just another morning, and, you know, that sort of thing. A lot of play, a lot of just painting and free, you know, go. If you don't want to do the activity with a teacher, that's fine. You're on the mat playing with the Lego. You know, so I just feel for parents that have, you know, sent their kids there, and instead of, like, building a love of learning, the school is crushing it before they've even really started.
Mm. One telling tale is, as a parent, when you walk into the pre-primary classroom, which may have been play-based in the past, is the trend that all children will sit down to complete a worksheet, or they might sit in groups. But basically there's a provision of one desk per child. And so what happens is there's more desks coming into the classroom environment, and the space for the socio-dramatic play area, which is often called the home corner, the large block constructions, the painting easels, the collage table.
All things that you would expect in those classes.
All constant positives is what we used to call them, because they were always constantly provided, and it was always going to be a positive experience for the child, because they could initiate their design and take ownership for their learning. But if you're walking into a classroom and it's full, a pre-primary classroom, and it's full of desks and tables, go looking, look for where the large blocks are, look for the socio-dramatic play, because those things are disappearing. And we have regular reports where pre-primaries are selling their buckets and spades and the water trolley, because there's this perception that all that learning, that sensory learning, is somehow now not important to pre-primary.
Jenny, hello. You are a former teacher?
Former teacher and former school psychologist, yes.
Your thoughts on this, Jenny?
I'm just really distressed hearing about these mothers who are, you know, just not getting what they want for their children. I made a radical decision and sent my son to a Steiner school where play was just everything. Everything was done through play. Songs were learnt through play. Even the beginning of kindy, they didn't go straight to kindy. We had a picnic down at Point Walter. That's how the kids met each other and the teachers. And then there was a picnic in the playground of the school. And then the next week they started. So they already had that experience of other mothers, all the teachers.
And you didn't have the anxiety in the school? You didn't
no
have
anxiety. Crying. Happily skipped into the classroom. See your mum, mum. You know, like
I'm off to play.
You can go now. and loved it. It was all play based.
I do now want to go to Gary Hewitt. He's the Assistant Executive Director, Early Childhood, at the Department of Education. He has been listening to this discussion. Gary, good morning to you.
Good morning.
You have been listening to the concerns, not only from our panel, but parents, teachers that are calling and texting. Do you acknowledge that there is widespread, that this is an issue that needs your attention?
I don't think it's... I think it's a bit, I suppose, one-way discussion a bit this morning, but it was really fantastic to hear people's opinions from... And people such as Sandra, I know Sandra and myself and my team have had discussions, regular discussions over many, many years in all aspects of early childhood education. And it was lovely to hear Jenny Jay, also from Curtin University, talking about the difference between free play and scaffolded play. So I think it's an interesting debate. Parents' expectations of schools continue to increase. Really enjoying the debate this morning.
Okay.
And happy to add my add my opinion as well.
Please do. So what is the policy then when it comes to the amount of play?
Okay, I can jump in pretty quick.
Please
there
do.
Isn't a policy, even in the early years learning framework, which applies to kindergarten in Western Australia and generally in the childcare, the kindergarten element of childcare across Australia. So there isn't a stipulation of how much play, but it's fundamental to that rather than the amount of play. It is fundamental that children do learn in the early years in a playful way, so there's no question about that.
Yeah, and you say the concepts of play and learning are certainly not mutually exclusive in
Definitely
our early
not.
Years.
That's right.
But it's got to be bright, creative and fun.
Yes.
It does seem a little vague, though. Does there need to be more stipulation about the amount of hours and the kind of plays, you know, structured as opposed to free play?
I wouldn't have thought so. I mean, listening to the conversation this morning, school principals and schools and their communities have a strong say in the way that schooling is delivered. The curriculum is the curriculum, and that's stipulated by the Standards Authority and what elements are to be covered. But the way you go about that is obviously it's a strong decision making from the school level.
Are principals too results driven though? Because we're hearing today that a lot of this is being driven by the principals, and there is concern that there is too much emphasis on, you know, testing and results for these kindy and pre-primary kids. And there is a lot of testing of them, which does come at a national level. I understand that too.
Yes. I think the whole aspect of testing across Australia is very it's a hot topic for debate at the moment, but we do expect our children to learn. We've got highly skilled, well-paid teachers. We expect them to teach, but like I said, we want the children, very young children especially, to learn in a playful way so they develop their language, thinking, problem-solving, ability to get on. Social-emotional development needs to be really emphasised because we want our children to be decision-makers, be able to construct their own learning, and without their ability to be able to interact and develop relationships, they won't fulfil their full potential.
Does there need to be another look at this, though? I mean, we are hearing today that there is concern, and you know, you're saying you don't believe there is, but certainly there does seem to be a level of concern, and is it time to look at this? And as Sandra Hesterman wants, a play strategy.
So I know Sandra and I we've spoken about this quite a bit. I don't disagree with the point that actually I think people have, obviously this morning people have spoken and are quite adamant about the lack of play. I know that's been debated in the community, so I acknowledge that. But what we see is, I see the whole area of nature play through schools is really developing and growing. It's in my time in education, which has been close on 40 years, I've never seen the development of nature play, outside play in schools and being a proactive approach at the rate that is happening at the moment. So it'd be really interesting, I think, to get Nature Play WA and get their opinion on the growth of nature play across Western Australia.
Just on that point too, it's really interesting that nature play and the whole use of blocks and cartons and objects to create from are now being used in upper school. I've even had examples where early childhood teachers are saying their blocks have been taken away and the 6 and 7s are using them for STEM activities. There is certainly a push on outdoor play, but so often it isn't in the early years. It's now higher up in schools. And Gary, I'm not, you know, I don't want today to sound as if it is a criticism of state schools. We've got wonderful things happening in some state schools. For instance, at Jolimont, where the principal won Principal of the Year award, which was really well deserved. A principal who really trusts her early childhood staff and talks to them, and they take actions together. And the staff are involved in looking at what in the NQS review internally in the school. I mean, I've got confirmation here from over 3,000 early childhood teachers in WA who are very unhappy with what's going on, what they're being made to do by the admin.
Okay, thank you. Is that Sue? Sorry, was that Sue?
Sue.
Okay, Sue, and thanks for the acknowledgement of the work at Jolimont and And then that's not atypical, that's typical of schools. But I acknowledge that if we've got 3,000 people that are, you know, that are unhappy and they're seeing, you know, elements of this, of the way we deliver schooling needs to be looked at, we will look at it, of course, and we're really, really happy to work with Sandra and the Teachers Union and, you know, all the interested parties and key stakeholders to be maybe a bit more explicit what we say in relation to the importance of teaching. I mean, the Director-General, Sharon O'Neill, has been quite explicit over many, many years about that she expects in early childhood teaching and learning that children learn in a playful way.
We'll leave it there. Gary Hewitt, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Nadia Mitsopoulos on ABC Radio Perth and on the ABC Listen app.
So you heard there from Gary Hewitt. Nothing much is going to change. I think that was clear. They have allow for play, but there's certainly no directive as to how much. And Sandra, you would like that, wouldn't you?
Well, I was interested in the point about nature play because in 2016, Early Childhood Australia WA called a couple of forums of key stakeholders to give feedback, and the feedback was why it was timely for Western Australian to develop a play strategy, not unlike what has occurred in other countries, Play Scotland, Play Wales, Play Ireland. And the focus of it was how to raise awareness of the importance of play in the community. So not just at school, it could be at the early learning development centres, you know, childcare, could be in the home and in the community. And certainly we know that there's many city councils, town councils doing a fantastic job on promoting play in the community. The discussion paper that was written, the feedback from the key stakeholders was that they were extremely appreciative of Griffin Longley and his initiative for Nature Play. But I think that you need to see it, the play-based learning in kindergarten and pre-primary is not the same. It can encompass Nature Play. But we're looking at play-based learning that we did have and we want it reinstated. It's not radical. It's not new. It's in keeping with early childhood philosophy that's been around for a couple of centuries.
And it is about critical thinking and communication and
that's right.
Those sort of skills that we did a forum a couple of weeks ago on future jobs, and they were the kind of things, intuition, they were the kind of skills that are now required for this new era of jobs that are coming on board. Look, I want to go to Ian. He is a principal of a primary school. Good morning, Ian.
Good morning. How are you going?
Good, thanks, Ian.
I'm a bit disappointed that the panel there is quite happy to throw the principals under the bus. I think there needs to be a little bit of a sense of perspective. I think they've ignored a couple of things. First of all, the starting age of school changed 10, 15 years ago. We're now governed by an Australian curriculum, a specific WA curriculum outline that talks about specific content for all kids pre-primary up. Yes, the department frowns on staggered entry. Some of us still do it because we think it's best for the kids. In talking to my kindy teachers, and I think that's probably the thing that irks me most of all, is that principals are portrayed as intimidating and bullying kindy teachers. I listen to my kindy teachers, I listen to my kindy EAs, and they say to me quite regularly that every year, over the years, more and more kids are coming to school with poor social skills, poor oral language. And you know what? We don't take the alternative of stick them at a desk and give them a worksheet. We sit and talk to them. We let them play. We structure their learning. We structure their activities so that they're involved in all of those things. My teachers differentiate. That means that this kid might need this and that group of kids might need something else. And saying that one size fits all, throwing your principals under the bus, is not the right answer.
I don't think, I apologise if that's the impression given.
But
I think
it wasn't the impression, it's perfectly clear what you said.
I think it was very clearly said very early in the piece that there is exemplary practice in some schools. It's not to say there aren't fantastic schools doing a fantastic job. The point was made is that as a parent enrolling your child at the local community, you will never know until your child is there what the quality, the implementation, for example, of the National Quality Standard, of which Standard 1 is the Early Years Learning Framework, which on page 9 says it has a specific emphasis on play-based learning. That implementation of play-based learning across the state in schools is not transparent nor accountable to the local community, and that's what we are wanting. We want universal access to quality play-based learning, time, resources, program for every child in Western Australia. And if it's the case that your school is doing a fantastic job, that's fantastic. But there is plenty of anecdotal evidence that is received from many advocacy groups, State School Teachers Union, Early Years Reference Group, the list goes on, and people don't feel that it's satisfactory that it should be an ad hoc implementation across the state.
Absolutely, and the issue with there is state and national curriculum, and I have got copies of school plans and targets that are putting year one targets and what is meant to be in the curriculum in kindergarten and pre-primary. We've got children of 3 and a bit going into kindergarten. Okay, school, and I was in central office when we did the change of age. It was only of 6 months, not a whole year. And we have got children now in kindy being put on individual education plans, IEPs, in first term because they are deemed to be not meeting pre-primary or year one expectations. And I've got evidence of that. And I'm saying it's not all schools, Ian, there is a lack of respect for early childhood teachers.
That's exactly my point, that I'm disappointed to hear that. I would not accept an IEP from a kindy teacher in the first semester. The poor little kids are settling in. Let them settle in, let them grow, and let's see. But you're making generalisations, as you are, about the admin teams did this, the admin teams did that. Schools are expecting IEPs. Not all schools. I'm surrounded by lots of great government schools that do fantastic jobs, and I'll guarantee none of them are putting their kids on IEPs. None of them are poring over data while the kids are in kindy.
But can you confirm that all those schools are implementing quality play-based learning?
Well, I can't
speak for other schools, Ian.
No, I can't. Yeah. I can't say that I am implementing play-based learning at an appropriate level. My kindy teachers tell me how much they want their kids out. I go down there every two times a day when the kids are outside to see what the kids are doing. And I see lots of kids riding little bikes, sitting in the sandpit, pouring stuff. I see them having little arguments. I see them getting inside the barrel and rolling down the bank, which they shouldn't do. But they're having a great time. They're getting a few little scratches and injuries. They get a few little tears, but they're having a wonderful time. I see that in my kindy kids twice a day, every day.
Ian, thank you. Time is escaping us, but I appreciate you. Thank you for calling in. And look, maybe Ian is the exception, and it's great to hear that he is listening to his staff. That's fantastic here. In the few minutes we have left, because Gillian's got to come in and talk about a program, I really want to go to Jim. He is also a principal. Jim, you've got about 2 minutes.
Okay. I disagree and agree with Ian. I disagree that it's not a concern when you talk to early childhood teachers. I agree with Jim in that he seems to be working with his teachers and looking after them. But I think we've got to be concerned about new directions that are coming down, which include explicit direct instruction, which goes back to repainted rote learning of the 50s and 60s. And this has started in primary, and it's pushing down into the little kids. And play seems to be a waste of time to those people. I'll stick with Jim and talk to staff and be resistant to changes, because we know that structured play and good planning by experienced and trained early childhood teachers are the way to move kids forward, not drill and kill.